Hello, everybody. And today I'm going to be with my friend Rohana. He's a friend of a friend living in Reno, Nevada. And I convinced him to read a book called That's Not English, Britishisms. That is so hard to say. Americanisms and What Our English Says About Us. And it's by Aaron Moore. And it's a really interesting book. It's a deep dive into culture and language. And you know, I love those things. And because he's a Londoner, I got to pick his brain about language and cultural differences, like how we feel about class distinctions and even the weather. And in fact, as we're recording this, it's rainy season here for me in Guadalajara, Mexico. I mean, the weather's lovely in temperature, but I've always got an umbrella with me. And until I read this book, I didn't know that the British had a special word for umbrella. So let's get on with the show so that you can find out what that word is. I'm Bianca, your personal American accent coach, and I'm here to help you master an American accent in English because your voice is your choice when it comes to how you sound. I try to release a podcast episode every 2 weeks, and so you should really subscribe to whatever podcast platform you use so that you don't miss the newest episode. And by the way, if you want to see the full video of the episode, it's available at Accent Coach Bianca on YouTube. Now, let's get on with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to one of the newest podcast episodes. I've been wanting to make this for a long time, and I couldn't quite find the right person. So I'm going to say thank you to Rohana for coming because he's a native British English speaker. And maybe you can also clarify, Rohana, when we say that, should we say British English? Should we say UK? Like, I'm always kind of confused about the difference. Maybe as you introduce yourself, then you can tell us that. And also, by the way, guys, you can probably hear some horns, some sirens in the background. There's a ton of construction going on for Rohana, even though he's got the window closed. Like, you guys are going to hear some extra ambiance today. Welcome, Rohana, and thank you so much for joining us. Tell us a little bit about you.
Thank you, Bianca. Thank you so much for inviting me on your program here. Yes, a little noisy here. A bit about my background. I was born in London. I grew up most of my life in Harrow's part of Northwest London, went to University of Manchester, came back to London, and then I moved to the US to work, and I was working in Rhode Island, the smallest state in the union. And then quite a while I was working in San Francisco Bay Area, and now I currently live in Reno, Nevada.
Ooh, very interesting. And not to say I'm going to use you for your accent, but where I'm living in Mexico, I don't actually know a lot of native British English speakers. And I was always confused, and really I still am. When do we say British and when do we say UK? Can you clarify that? And if not, that's fine.
No, I can. It's very confusing for people, even people living in the UK, as to what is what and what composes the country. Because historically, United Kingdom is actually four different countries. Be like in the US, each state would sometimes its own set. Like, you probably know Texas at one point was an independent republic. So like that, what makes up the United Kingdom is England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland. Britain means England, Scotland, and Wales. So that single island with England, Scotland, and Wales, but not Ireland. So the full name of the country is the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
And when do we say England then?
England would be, people use these terms interchangeably. Of course, people from Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland get upset if you use the wrong term, and people from the Republic of Ireland get upset if you use terms and include them. So England would be something that is happening only in the portion of, like, the southern portion, the middle and southern portion in the island of Great Britain.
Okay, that's really helpful, actually. We're just talking about geography
Yeah.
right now, and what we are talking about today is the English language,
Yes.
right? Which has so many different accents and dialects and idiolects and idiosyncrasies as well. So the language of English, which is worldwide, right? And there's so many different dialects, and I'm really happy to have found you through friends of friends. Because I said, wow, I read this book called That's Not English. And I thought, I have to share this with some people who are British and see how accurate these things are. Because the book is written from the point of view of a woman, an American woman, who I can't remember if she married a Brit or if they just moved there for work, but it was her observations on language. And I said, man, I can't wait to talk to a native speaker of British English to get their take on it, right? So I'm really excited to have you here today. And we have three specific chapters we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the use of the word sorry, which I know you might pronounce different than me, brawly, how I read them out loud. And then the third one is how we both use bespoke to mean something different. And this is just three of, like, I can't remember how many chapters, but I found the book to be super interesting. Overall, how did you like the book?
I did like the book. And it's actually seeing those observations from an American angle and then how I thought about them, which is slightly different. And of course, if I was writing a book about, say, American English, I'd have observations about American English, and Americans look at them, they totally disagree with those observations, because I think each person's cultural viewpoint has a big impact on how they perceive things.
Oh, yeah, and how we perceive language, how we communicate, how we connect. Yeah. That's actually a great idea. That could be a book that you write. Who knows?
Yeah.
That would be perfect. Okay, so the first term we're going to talk about, I think, is important for two reasons, at least in, let's say, my flavor of English, which is, number one, in my view, if we compare British speakers and American speakers, we intonate much more dramatically than probably you guys do. So, for example, what if I said this to you? Tell me your initial emotional reaction, right? I'm going to say the word S-O-R-R-Y, but think about my intonation and think about what's behind it. What do I really mean? Are you ready? We're going to play a little game. Okay, ready? Sorry. What does that say to you?
That is more like, to me, like sarcastic or even a potential put down.
Yes, exactly. So, well, here's another one. Ready? Sorry.
Oh, that was like something happened, you're surprised, not quite sure how to react, and you're not even sure if it's your fault. Like you're walking, you bump into somebody.
Nice. In my mind, I was thinking I stepped on your toes or you stepped on my toes, you know, a little bit. Yes, that's exactly what was in my mind. Totally. Okay, one more. Ready? Sorry.
Yeah, that's a little bit like the first one, but different. It's like comes across like an aggressive sorry.
I was going to ask, do you feel like I'm actually apologizing to you? Like, that was kind of like where I was going with that. Exactly. So same word, lots of different intonation. It can mean many, many different things, right? So I remember where I grew up was pretty far north in the U.S., close to Canada. And we used to always make fun of them because they were constant. Like, if you stepped on their foot, they would say sorry. And so it's used more commonly in Canada, but I don't know the relationship. Like, how do we use the word sorry in where you're from, like in London? What would that mean? Can you give us some examples?
Okay. You're very good at doing the tones, because for me, it's like I probably do those naturally, but then trying to like act and do the tones without the situation is difficult for me.
Maybe that's cultural. Who knows? It could be cultural. Or it could be just like an awareness issue. But I have a lot of clients who come to me and they feel like they speak really flat in a way, and they can't get people to laugh at their jokes. People don't know when they're being sarcastic. They just think they're being mean. And that's all intonation, right? And there are patterns that we can study. So, okay, tell us in your mind what you're thinking about the word sorry.
What am I thinking? So I'm probably thinking, okay, I'm saying it. And I'm saying it with sincerity. So I'm not so much into say sorry with some different underlying meaning. Mm-hmm. And even some things I've changed from moving to the US, which is somebody says something I couldn't hear. And English, you'd say, sorry, could you repeat that, please? Was now changing. Okay, US, say, come again.
Ah, that's true. And think about how you just said that. Say that I can't hear you kind of sorry again. And I want everyone to listen to how he goes very high in pitch. Sorry, sorry. Say that again.
Sorry, could you repeat that, please?
This is not his baseline pitch, right? Sorry. Yeah. So he really like ramps up that pitch and intonation. I know you said like, I'm not so good at it, but that's a very clear indication of this person cannot hear me. They're making a request, right? Yeah. And so that's what I'm taking your meaning as. I think it was very clear. So yeah. So tell us more how we would use this in the UK differently, maybe.
The word sorry. Okay. I've got to think of other cases. I'm definitely the step on your toes, say sorry. Or it's like an accommodation. You're not quite sure what's gone wrong. Or it's like a kind of neutral, generic statement. Sorry, let's just move on, whatever it is.
So I'm thinking of another use of sorry, because, you know, words have functions, right? They have a purpose, they have a job. And maybe you've seen this hashtag before. It was kind of popular a while ago. It was like hashtag sorry, not sorry. I don't know if you remember that. But when people say, no, you don't remember that. So sometimes people will start a sentence this way. I don't know if it's the same in the UK,
okay,
but let's say we're in a meeting at work and somebody says, you know, I'm sorry, but I just have to, and whatever's coming next, you know, they're not sorry. They often say, they introduce what they're going to say because they know something negative is coming. They'll say, oh, I'm sorry, but, and you've got this really like tone of like, I just have to say this right now. Do they use it the same way in the UK as well?
Okay, it's been a while. I'm going to guess yes.
Okay.
But it has been a while since I've actually worked in the UK, been in a work environment.
True. Or even just with friends and they want to kind of like give you some truth and they're like, you know, I'm sorry, but those pants just look terrible on you. Or just something like that. Maybe in terms of like between friends or something. I don't know if you can remember that. I know it's been a while.
I think the people I'm friends with, they'll probably be more comfortable being more direct. Yeah.
Okay, that's a good point. Do you feel like UK versus US, who do you feel like is more direct in general since you've been in both places?
US, definitely.
Really? Oh, interesting. So if somebody in the UK is a little more direct with you, would that indicate that you have a closer relationship or maybe they're
because,
just rude?
Yeah, absolutely. Like with your friends, they'll probably kid around with you and say some joke or say, hey, Bianca, your hair's dreadful. Something like that. And you know, they're just kidding around with you. You know how when you're close with people, they just make jokes about you and fun, or you'll have some kind of in joke that just circulates around and seems like to people on the outside, they look like they're being mean to you, but actually it's your own little in joke.
Yeah, you've got that closeness. Uh-huh.
Yes.
And I think that's why in American English, sarcasm works so well because it really makes a line of, do you get it? Do you get it?
Yeah.
Right? And if you don't get it, you're out, you know? So there's that distinction too. Okay. So there's one more thing I wanted to ask about sorry. Okay. So the idea of passive aggressive, insecurity, and politeness. I want to use that. Okay. So I want to ask about that. So you said about how sorry can kind of sound a little passive aggressive, which I think is very interesting. And then we were talking about politeness too, like actual politeness versus maybe something a bit more insincere. So how do you feel like the two countries or cultures differ in how we use sorry to be sincere?
Okay. I actually think on this, as you're saying, who's more direct? I think Americans are more direct. Say, for example, Texans are known for things, hey, plain speaking. I say what I like and I like what I say. There, if people don't want to apologize, they'll just come straight out with it. Well, this, I'm not saying sorry because I'm right on this issue. Whereas in the UK, because of cultural norms, I'm supposed to say sorry, so I'll do it. So people are more resistant to breaking the cultural norms than in the US.
This is actually an interesting side point too, but I've been in cultures too where it's more about guilt versus shame. And so if you say you're sorry, you're taking the responsibility of wrongdoing, let's say, right? So if you don't say a tactic, maybe, I don't know, a strategy of not saying sorry is not about the other person, but about like what the culture is going to think of me. What is my family going to think if I apologize? Because that means I'm guilty. Whereas in some cultures, it might not mean guilt. It just means like you said, that's just the accepted thing to do. You say sorry, even if you're not. You say sorry, even if you're not at fault, right? That's just what we expect of people. So that's a really good extra little bonus cultural thing, right?
Yeah.
So that's exciting. And to kind of link that to our next topic, just yesterday, it was the funniest thing. We were in my community and it was office hours, I believe. And somebody posted this video of Nigella Lawson. Do you know Nigella Lawson?
Yes, I do. Yes.
I love her. She is fantastic. And there was a video of Nigella Lawson and she was cooking, obviously. She was making a thing. And she said, okay, now put this in the, I'm going to name it household appliance. Put this in the microwave.
Yes. Right?
Like that. And that is how she said it. And somebody posted this video saying like, oh my God, it's outrageously posh in a way. So what do you think of, let's start with the word, I would say microwave. Was she saying it like this in your thought to be posh? Was she kind of mispronouncing it to be funny, do you think? Like, is this how certain areas, because I know there's so many accents in the UK and Britain, there's so many accents. Do you think there are people who actually say that? Like, what's your thought on microwave, first of all?
Right. I think in some ways she was being sarcastic in there probably are people who say microbiota and think they're being sophisticated because you think about cooking, it's French, it's going to be sophisticated. Microwave, this American piece of technology. Now, something you may know, do you know when it first came out, the microwave was called the radar range?
Oh, I would, if I had to guess, I would say pre-World War II. I don't know.
No, because after World War, it was, I think, in late 50s, early 60s, microwave came.
I figured it was probably some kind of military technology. So it was in the 50s or something, right?
Okay. Yeah, it probably came out of research during World War II. Yeah.
That makes sense.
So it doesn't suit going to a kitchen. So there are probably people who say that, and then she's making fun of those people. Rather than she normally says that, or that she would say it, she's at a dinner party and to sound sophisticated, a dude, or some people it just become their in joke.
Exactly, because you're maybe making fun of a subgroup of people who do think it's the real pronunciation. And I thought that was hilarious. That was just yesterday in my office hours. And then we're going to talk about this today. And I was reviewing my notes and I thought, oh, yeah, the next word, I'm going to spell it out because most Americans would look at this word and not know how to say it because there's a letter O in there and they probably wouldn't know the relationship between the real word. So the word is B-R-O-L-L-Y. And you might think that's a typo. You might think of somebody saying prolly. Like this is very common in texting now, right? Instead of probably, people are writing P-R-O-L-L-Y, prolly. I'll probably be late, right? But no, it's a B, B as in Bianca. Brawly? Am I saying that correctly? And what does that mean for you?
Umbrella.
Oh, yeah, of course, umbrella. Where does this come from?
I have no idea where it comes from, but it's a common phrase. If anything, you could consider it upper class slang.
This is why I thought it might be related to the microwave thing. I thought maybe somebody looked at the word umbrella and thought it was umbrella or something like that. I thought maybe it came from there, but it's not quite the same, right? Brella, brawly. So this just means umbrella?
Yeah. I don't know the history on brawly, but the microwave thing was probably new as in probably somebody first said it in the last 20 years or so. Brawly, I think it's a 100 or maybe 200 years old word.
Wow.
Yeah. So we've had that in UK for a long time. And no, with that, it isn't like... It's like not like a fake posh thing. It's just something a certain group of people have always said. Mm-hmm. Now, another phrase is, and you may have seen this watching some British TV show. Someone's drinking some wine, they smell it, and he goes, oh, this wine, it has a certain je ne sais quoi to it. And people sound very sophisticated. Oh, it's got a je ne sais quoi. Well, je ne sais quoi is a French phrase, and you convert it, and it's, I don't know. And if something comes up, what is it? I don't know. You sound like some, they say, that ignorant working class person. But, you convert to French, you're sophisticated and upper class.
Yes, so of course.
It's a little game people play, like with microwave. And I remember when I was in London, there's certain parts of London which were moving up market. And there's a place called Streatham. And people would say, St. Wreatham.
Place names are so difficult, too. And so when they were saying this place name differently, is that because, like we said, they didn't know when they were trying to sound posh, or they did know and they were making fun, do you think?
I think making fun and just people wanted to put on that. They didn't want to say, I'm in Streatham, this kind of working area that's getting gentrified. And probably right now, Streatham is probably very different. Also, the area... It was just south of Brixton. There were riots in Brixton, I remember, and it was considered a very bad area, and that slowly moved up market.
That makes sense. We're going to come around to talk back about class and things like that, but brawly isn't like that. Is that right? Brawly is just like an everyday term that people use for umbrella that we just don't know about. And maybe that's because the weather there is so rainy kind of all the time. How do you feel like, because if you're in Reno, Nevada, it's quite sunny, and so you probably don't carry a brawly with you. What is it like culturally to kind of live with that weather? Have you noticed any differences?
Oh, the weather, you've got four seasons, but they're more extreme. So the winter is colder, the summer is hotter, autumn and spring are shorter because of the transitions. So it is very different weather from the UK.
And how does that translate into behavior? Like, do you bring layers with you when you go out? Do you just check and trust some weather app or something like that?
I do trust the weather app. You know, in the car, there's like a sweater just in case. And then people, I'd have like shovels, tires, the snow clamps, the tires.
I think chains or something chains. Like that.
Right? Snow chains, that's it. You've got snow chains in this case, you need to drive somewhere so that the stuff, yeah, there's more things in the car to deal with weather than the UK.
Oh, that's interesting. And you probably wouldn't take a brolly with you unless you saw that, hey, there's definitely rain coming, because in the UK, you're kind of always just kind of expecting it might rain. And so right. Would you normally have one with you?
No, I tend to have a waterproof and put the hood up because chances are I'm going to do something. So I'd like to have two hands free rather than one hand holding the brolly.
And what you just called this, I'm assuming that's your jacket, right? You're calling it a noun waterproof. You're saying it's a waterproof, correct?
Yeah.
For me, that would be a rain jacket or a raincoat. So that's another difference in vocabulary we didn't even know about that we're just kind of discovering right now. So fun, because when you talk to somebody, you just think, oh, English is English, but you find all these little things. And for a second, you're putting it together like, oh, that's what he's talking about. And I love that. I love that about language. So there can be cultural markers about how you speak, or your certain pronunciation can pinpoint exactly where you're from. And I think the British or the UK, the UKers are way more knowledgeable, sensitive, aware of those little tiny words. I think like you can say, oh, this person might be from there. You have more of a laser kind of observation of those things is my guess. No?
Yeah. What happens is to do with a variety of accents. Basically, within a very small area, even somewhere like London, and definitely the whole of the United Kingdom, there's more variation in accent than there is across all of the United States. And it's like 1/5 the population of the United States.
Yeah,
again, that's a lot of things are historical. That's because people talk about London being just a series of little villages and expanded. So people were separated, you know, without mass communication for a very long 1,000, 2,000 years. They developed local accents, local languages. Now, with the availability of mass media, radio and television, things are standardizing now, and you're getting probably less accent variation than 100 years ago pre-radio and television.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we see a lot of that too. We see a lot of news articles about people kind of losing an accent, or the younger generation kind of preferring to speak a different way, so they just do.
Yes.
Speaking of, like, you know, posh accents versus more, what would we say, lower class things, and being aware, having more class awareness as well, probably in the UK than in the US, or maybe not even awareness, but appreciation or usage of classification, I would say. Here's the name of a place. I'm going to name the place, and then you guess the last word we're going to talk about. So I know there's a place called Savile Row, I think it is. And for people who don't know, what do they do on Savile Row, and what word can you think of would go with that?
Men's tailoring is for basically go to get a custom suit made.
Custom suit. What's a word that we have a difference in? It could kind of mean like custom suit in this way.
Okay. Bespoke.
So tell me what your feelings are around the word bespoke if we're talking about UK versus US.
I would actually say, I kind of understand the point you're getting. I actually think in the UK, it's changing as well to become more like the US version. Like bespoke originally meant it is something that's 100% custom made for you. So it's the suits they're looking at, okay, exactly how many, but not just fit. What type of collar, what type of tail to have, and so on. Now, the modern version, which I would say is the might call the US version or even the British modern, bespoke means it's made to measure or it's adjusted for you, but it's not 100% made for you.
From the ground up, right? So
yes.
The original meaning of bespoke, which we could say was more British, but that's changing, is from the ground up, like every bit of it is just for you. And it's not like, I like what you said before, off the rack or something like that. You said
or made to measure.
Made to measure. Thank you. That was the term. Because I think also off the rack, we don't use as much as you guys do too.
Yeah.
But made to measure. So when we say that, do we mean that like there's a general template of a size and then we kind of, you know, fit it out specifically to the person? Is that what made to measure means?
Correct.
Okay. So now you're saying that bespoke is more like made to measure, and we're using bespoke to mean more like
made to measure,
correct? Which is what we would do in the US. We would buy something that's, you know, a certain size, knowing that, well, that's not exactly going to fit me correctly. So I'm going to go to the tailor and get it kind of adjusted to fit just me. But that doesn't mean it was made from zero just for me. Is that kind of like hitting where you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah, okay. That would be there. I mean, I would actually say made to measure would be you wouldn't buy it and adjust it, as opposed to it would be made. Someone would have a template. They cut the material. They make it for you. But still, there aren't so many choices and it isn't 100% for you.
And so maybe not all the available variety is there, but like it's more about the fit, I think.
Yes, it would still have a much better fit than if you'd gone and made something up, bought something off the rack.
Uh-huh, that makes sense now. Okay, so we're both now using bespoke to mean that. And I saw the funniest thing. Here's a little pop quiz for you. Don't worry if you don't have an answer. What in your mind, and maybe it's cultural, what's the difference between teaching someone and coaching them in your mind?
In my mind, teaching would be like a educational situation. Say you go to school, which actually means two different things in UK versus US, or university or high school, and you're sitting there and you absorb, someone's teaching you, they're telling you how to do. Coaching is you already have a skill and somebody's looking at what you're doing and seeing how to improve what you have, as opposed to teaching you something brand new.
Well, I like that. I've never heard anybody describe it quite like that. What was happening in my mind is more like how you started saying, like, you're in an institution, right? You're absorbing something. You're just kind of sitting passively while somebody else is kind of doing the work, right? Whereas coaching in my mind is like what you were saying, bespoke. To me, it's bespoke.
Yes.
And yeah, you come to me, I look at your skills. I see, you know, maybe I see what you can't see. I see where you're lacking. And so I work with you kind of one-on-one for sure.
Yes.
It could be small group coaching, but definitely not. Teaching is more like, here's some PowerPoints. Let's go through it. That's it. And so when we say the word bespoke, I saw a, I think it was, I don't know if it was an accent coach or a dialect coach, but they had a very, what I would say, posh looking website, right? Very, very lifestyle and, you know, beautiful beige furniture and frondy plants and things. And it was very beautiful. And it said like bespoke accent coaching.
Right.
And I thought to myself, but all accent coaching is bespoke, right? Because you are one person that I'm working with. You speak in one certain way. So I just thought it was a funny use of the word bespoke in my field, you know? So I wanted to share that with you too, because I thought it was kind of funny. Yeah, what's your experience then? Give us a little taste, because we're going to wrap it up soon, but give us a little taste of your perceptions, right, of living in the U.S. now. So native London British English speaker, you come to the U.S. Are there any other phrases or words that come to mind that you think, oh, when I first heard that, that was so strange for me? Can you think of any?
No, there weren't that many phrases. I thought, oh, that's really odd. The two things that come to one mind was, one, idea of something certified or certifiable. So in the UK, a certifiable is often used in the sense of somebody's mad. They're certifiable as the lunatic or a mental case.
Yeah, whereas, even when you say mad, we think of angry. We don't really think of
crazy mental illness type. So you could be considered certifiable. It was like section something of this law said you could be certified and then sent to some medical center. Whereas a lot of people made in the US were using, oh, it's certifiable being, oh, skill, I need a certificate to do this. And some of those are differences down to, say, the way work is. Like, for example, in the US, you want to be a hairdresser, you need to get your state license to be a hairdresser, state license to do, and lots of things where in the UK there is no license. You just go, oh, I'm setting up a hairdresser, I'm setting up a nail salon or so on. You don't need any certificate. I think US people think of certificates more in a commercial way or educational way, that they need it for their business, you know, for a wide range of skills. Where in the UK it's, oh, okay, you need to get qualified to be a doctor, lawyer, an accountant, something. But most jobs, most people doing, you don't need a certificate.
Yeah,
I mean, that's even changed over time. There's more, especially in the time the UK was part of the EU, there are more regulations. Okay, if you want to be a builder, you have to, you know, if you're going to fit gas appliances, you need this type of license. There's more and more licensing that's job related in the UK than before. But especially when I was a kid, there's a lot less than the US.
And you would probably use the word license rather than certify, because that would have a negative connotation, because it's more related to mental stuff. Super interesting. I never would have thought of that. Is there anything else that sticks out in your mind? And if not, that's okay. I'm just asking.
Okay, one big thing was about, and it can take this and talk about culture. In the US, when kids are at high school or any elementary school, you could be president of the United States one day, and all their teachers encourage them to think big, that this opportunity is there, that you could be president or achieve what you want. Whereas in Britain, people say something about, you say, oh, you know what? I'm going to be prime minister of the United Kingdom. Look, Sonny, don't get ideas above your station. And that concept doesn't even exist in the US. And this reflects on a lot of things about why people say sorry, why is there sarcasm in the UK. It's the culture of the country. In the UK, there's always been royalty. There's been a hierarchical structure. You know, you have people of lords, dukes, barons, and so on. So everybody knew their position, where they were in the hierarchical. You know, the king was at the top, and where did you fit in? And, you know, if you're some serf or peasant at the bottom, you knew your place and position. So you had to work within your position. And then it goes to being sarcastic that if you didn't like the king, you couldn't actually say, I don't like the king. You could have been one time beheaded. So, oh, the king, he's absolutely outstanding. He's a fantastic speaker, but you mean exactly the opposite.
Oh, and that's where your sarcasm would come in.
Yes.
Because you didn't have the ability to say that kind of with free confidence that nothing would happen to you. Oh, so interesting.
Okay. Because you look at the founding of the United States, they said in the Constitution, there'll be no titles or wars. There's not going to be no lords and princes or being a sir. And everyone was equal, was in there. So the concept was
like freedom of speech as well. Yes. Maybe that's where it comes from, is that the inability to express yourself in that way. And also the social mobility wasn't there, you know, when we were under British rule as well, because there was very rigid class system. And so that's going to be reflected in language too. It makes perfect sense. And my guess is that, like, if you're in a certain class, you identify with that and you don't use the language of the other groups, right? Because that could be confusing, or you could be seen as, I think you said earlier, putting on airs. That's another phrase we don't use that much, but we know what it means. And so we have a lot of different references that we wouldn't even have in the US and we wouldn't even get. And I think that's sometimes why we have a hard time, not a hard time, but sometimes British humor, the underlying humor, we don't always get.
Yes, it is. And that also, like, the class thing is, in the US, most people would describe themselves as middle class, regardless of the income. Whereas in the UK, people actually quite carefully think about, are they lower class, middle class, upper middle class, upper class. And there can be a situation you could actually be quite wealthy, but you're not considered upper class. That you could have a title, but, you know, one of your forefathers was an inveteran gambler, lost all the money, and you just have a regular job, but you have a title and you're upper class. Where somebody else could be, oh, I had a startup. We just sold it to Google for $1 billion. Now I'm worth £100 million, but they're not at upper class.
Wow. We don't have that because if we don't have the titles and the differences, then we can't make that distinction at all, right? That makes sense. How we would lump it all together, then it wouldn't
have been. We phrase nouveau riche. I think it gets used a little bit, or maybe somewhere like New York, where you have older wealthy families, they would. But generally in the US, that is not a phrase that's used. But it is in the UK.
And in the UK, when you say that, is it something that has some negative connotation as well? Or is it?
Yes, it is considered negative that somebody's gauche. Oh, they're nouveau riche. They're driving around in a neon pink Lamborghini. That's a vulgar thing to be doing.
It's very gauche. It's very, very like that. Which we don't really have the same concepts. We might feel the same way about it, but we don't have a standardized maybe way to talk about it. So to me, that's super interesting because I don't get a chance to talk to a lot of British speakers and really like find out about these little idiosyncrasies, especially somebody who's lived in both cultures, you know. So getting to talk to you today has been a real pleasure. And thank you so much for coming on today to discuss some of these differences. Now, this book has a lot of other words, a lot of other chapters. For example, along with sorry, one word that really, really always sticks to me is the word quite. So maybe if you're up for it, Rohana, maybe another time we can have another episode together where we're talking more about Britishisms, observations between cultures, you know, extra little words. So how would you feel about that if we did that another time?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I've been honored to be invited here. This has been absolutely fun talking to you about these things, and great for sharing the book with me as well and reading that. I enjoyed it. So yeah, I'd absolutely love to be on here again.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, for now, then, we're going to say goodbye to our listeners and thank everybody. Thanks, guys, for listening. And we'll say see you next time, I hope.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye, guys. See you. Thanks for listening all the way to the end, everybody. And you might know I like to share a little secret story for the people who listen all the way through. And because of all this rain that I've been having, I discovered mold in my back room. And now I've lived through maybe 7 rainy seasons here, and I've been running a dehumidifier since then. But the funny thing is that usually I empty that water only once a week, but this year it's almost every day. And it really sucks because that mold even got into some framed prints I had on the wall, which I then had to throw out. So I looked up how to clean it, and it turns out it's just bleach and water. So I'll give that a try and see if it works. In the meantime, if you have a specific topic about accents or pronunciation that you'd like to hear, let me know and I'll try to make it a reality. See you in the next episode.